We've been we're holding on page Lamed Vav in Sanhedrin Os Pei Beis. We've been learning about the battle with Ai and what happens to the what happened to the Jews when they went there and fought the first time and they were defeated in battle and people were killed, and we talked about the whole thing with Achan having taken from the spoils of Yericho, and that was the result of that. So now the Gemara is going to bring something relating to that. A pasuk says in Sefer Iyov, one of the speeches that one of the people there, Elihu, says to Iyov, he says, Hayarich Shuacha Loi Vitzar. Hayarich Shuacha Loi Vitzar. Now, there are many different explanations among the Mephoshim on the Pasuk, what the simple meaning of the Pasuk is. But Hayarich means to arrange. Shuacha is taken as Meloshin Shava, which was another word for tefillah. Loivit sir, not in trouble. So Rashi on the Pasuk explains that this is Elihu telling Iyov, what do you think? Is it appropriate to daven that you should never be in trouble? Ultimately, a person has to have troubles in life, and that's how his Averis are cleaned up. And different other Mephoshim have different explanations. Shua can also mean a rich person, and then they have a variety of different explanations what the Pasuk means. The whole Hayarach Shuach Aloivitzor is the first half of the pasuk. The second half continues V'chol Ma'amatzei Koyach and all the powers of strength. So what does this pasuk mean? Amar Rav Elazar La'olam Yachdim Adam Tefila L'Tzara. A person should always daven. Should always preempt the before the troubles come. He should be davening. In other words, don't wait until there's trouble and then daven, but hayarech shuacha. So in other words, Rashi explains, according to this explanation of the Gemara, Elihu was telling Iyov, did you do that? Hayarech shuacha. Did you arrange your tefillah before Hashem, loivitzer, when you were not yet in trouble? And if you had, v'chol ma'amatzei koyach, then you would have had tremendous power and reinforcement in your tefillah, and you might not be in the trouble that you are now. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar says, we learn from this that a person needs to daven before the trouble comes. And there's a number of different points in that. One point is the whole reason sometimes we find the Eibishter brings trouble on a person in order to motivate him to daven. One example of that is, for example, it says when Yonah was in the belly of the fish. So he's very comfortable there, and he didn't think of davening to Hashem to get him out of there. So Hashem causes him to go into the belly of another fish, a female fish, where he's crowded by all her eggs, and then he chapsich, then he needs to daven. So sometimes Hashem makes it difficult for a person to motivate him to daven. So therefore, better you should daven preemptively in the first place, and then Hashem doesn't need to bring the trouble on you. And there's a bunch of other points in it as well. When a person is in trouble, he doesn't have the frame of mind. He's not always in the frame of mind to daven properly, as opposed to when things are good, then he does. And then there's a point also when a person is in trouble, and then he first davens, then there's a point that maybe he makes it seem like I don't really need Hashem all the time. Only when I'm in trouble, then I follow all of the regular Derech HaTeva things, and then if none of them work, then I'll turn to the Eibishter, where that's of course exactly backwards. So therefore all those ideas are included in this. And so Rav Elazar says it doesn't even mean the person himself. It can mean his ancestors. If not for the fact that Avraham, hundreds of years earlier, had already davened to Hashem between Beis El and Ai, which is where this battle took place in Yeshua's times, hundreds of years later, and we find the pasuk says first Avraham came to Shechem, and then he built over there Mizbeach, and then Vayatik Misham Ahara, then he moved to the mountains over there, and he was Bein Beis El Vein Ai by Yuvin Sham Mizbeach. Hashem by Yikra B'Shem Hashem. So why Dafka there? Because if Avraham had not preempted it with davening, then there wouldn't have been left over from the enemies of the Jewish people, meaning the Jewish people themselves, if using a euphemism, even a remnant or a little bit, meaning as it is, they lost the battle in Ai, but only 36 people were killed, or we said before, maybe it was even only one person that was the equivalent of 36. But here, if it hadn't been for Avraham's tefillah earlier, then many more of them would have been killed. So therefore we see how important it is that the davening, that the tefillah should come before the trouble. Maharshal explains like this. When Avraham comes to when Avraham comes to Shechem and he builds a mizbeach over there, that's because Hashem appeared to him and said, "Lazaracha etenes aoret azoi." So in gratitude, he builds a mizbeach and vayikra b'shem Hashem. But now, when the pasuk continues that he moved between Beis El and Ai, it doesn't say over there what happened, what motivated him to build a mizbeach. Vayivin shom mizbeach laHashem vayikra b'shem Hashem. So why is that? It means he had nevuah. He knew that in the future the Jewish people, Rashi mentions on the pasuk, and he knew that in the future the Jewish people are going to fight a battle over there, and therefore he preemptively davened over there vayikra b'shem Hashem and davened over there that the Jewish people should be spared in that situation. Yom Yaakov points out in the pasuk over there, it says vayet oholoi, and it says with a hay, which Rashi says on the pasuk it means he pitched Sarah's tent before his own. So because We find when it comes to giving tzedakah, the Gemara mentions in a couple of places that a woman's tzedakah, where she gives the poor people ready to eat food, is better than the tzedakah of the man who gives money, which then the poor person has to go spend. So therefore, in token of that, maybe then Sarah's tefillah is more readily accepted than Avraham's, because she was in a way the greater balas chesed, and therefore Avraham, in token of that, pitched her tent first before his own. So that's how Yarech Shua Chaloi Batzar. Rish Lakish says further in this connection, when a person, now let's deal with the second half of the pasuk, if a person strengthens himself in his tefillah down here, then there won't be any sorim, there won't be any enemies or opponents that block his tefillah lamaila. So in other words, like this, there might be makatrigim. There can be the malachim created by his averus, or is the avera achas kind of like kategor echad, like we have in Pirkei Avos. So like this, though, when he's ma'amets atzmei b'tefillah, when he strengthens himself and then focuses on davening, then he won't have those sorim milamata. Rabbi Yochanan goes even further. It's not even a matter of preventing malachim from blocking him, but you actually need that the malachim should actually help him. A person should always be davening for rachmim, for Hashem, that everybody, all the malachim, should be strengthening his power, that he shouldn't have any tsorim up above. So in other words, there shouldn't be makatrigim, but that the Malach Asharis should actually help, that his tefillah should actually go up. So again, this is from that second half of the pasuk. So again, Hayarech Shuach, or if you come to Davin, Loi Bitzor, you want to make sure that you arrange your tefillah in a way that there will not be any tzorim, that there won't be any opponents there, V'chilma Matzei Koyach, and on the contrary, that there will be all the Malachim will be helping and encouraging and strengthening your tefillah to come up to Hashem. There's a lot of discussion among the Rishonim about the question of, does this include, so here we're saying that you should daven for Rachmim, that the Malachim should help his tefillahs. What do we have? Various places in tefillahs where we actually address the Malachim themselves, or where we address various Nivroim themselves and ask them to bring our tefillahs to the Eibishter. We have, for example, in Tzlichas, we have the Malachi Rachmim Meshor Se'elion. We have Machnisei Rachmim, Machnisei Rachameinu. We have in the Slichas on Erev Rosh Hashanah, Shloish Es Yomidus Amuris Vachanina. We appeal to the Shloish Es Yomidus to be a good to better for us in front of Hashem. There's quite a bit of discussion among Rishonim and Achronim whether you're allowed to do that, because since when do you daven to Nivrodim? You daven only to the Eveshteh. So it's one thing, for example, we talk about, let's say, davening by it's Gimel Tam who's going to the oil, Kolid going to Kibrit Sadikim, they're human beings. They had schusim of their own. They have schusim of their own. So therefore, you can ask them to be gute betters in front of the Eibishter. But malachim, for example, who have no bechira of their own and know nothing, they're kagars and biyad achoitzev, do you have any business addressing them? So there are Rishonim who are against the whole idea, and they took out a number of these piyotim when it comes to Shloish Es Yomidus, for example. In most books of Slichas, you'll find that the wording has been changed so that you're not addressing the Shloish Es Yomidus themselves, you're addressing the Eibishter. The person is addressing his own neshama and saying, go and beg by the Eibishter. The Rebbe, in the back of Slichas, restore the original version, and that's how we have it in our Slichas. Because look, if we can say Machnisei Rachmim, and if we can say Malachei Rachmim, Meshor Se'elyon, then we can say that. And there's a footnote in the Rebbe's notes on the Machzer. The Rebbe says, the fact is, we do say these things, and he points to the Tzemach Tzedek, right, in Shurish Mrs. Tzartfila, that ultimately, we're not asking by them, they have no power of their own, of course, but it means that we're asking them basically to be the tzino, to be the conduit through which our tefillos will come to the Eidish there. So therefore, so that's a valid thing to do. Okay. Next. The Mishnah had said, that we tell the person before they execute him, say vidui, because anybody who says vidui has a chelek lo mamba, as we see with Achan, where Yeshua gets him to confess publicly, and we went through the whole thing of how Achan admitted to what he had done, and we went through the whole discussion of that whole story, and then the Mishnah had said that how do we know that his vidui is mechaper for him is because of what Yeshua told him right before he was executed. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abana, we learn in a Braisa that expands on that more. Minayin shekiper lo vidui. How do we know that Achan's vidui was in fact mechaper for him, and he has a place in the Olam Haba? Shenemar, so as we said in the Mishnah, because the Pasuk says, Vayomer lo Yeshua v'gomer, Yeshua says to him, Me'achar tonu, why did you trouble us? Why did you make things muddy and confused for us? Ya'korcha Hashem, Vayomer zeh, Hashem will do the same thing for you on this day, from which we learn, as we said, Vayomer zeh after Achor, today, on this day, you're troubled, V'yata Achor lo Olam Haba, but you're not troubled in Olam Haba, because your vidui is mechaper for you. Now, thus far it was the same as the Mishnah. But now the Braisa adds another proof that Achan in fact won back his chelek lo mamba. Uchtiv, because you also have a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, when it goes through various family trees from Shevet Yehuda, it says, Uvnei Zerach, the children of Zerach, Peretz and Zerach. So now you have so the sons of Zerach, Zimri, the Eson, the Haman, the Chalka, the Darda, or the Dora, is how it says in the pasuk, Kulam Chamisha. They're all five. And then the Gemara is going to explain soon that Zimri is another name for Achan. So, but then it finishes off, Kulam Chamisha, they're all five. So, my Kulam Chamisha, so what does that mean? We can count the names ourselves and see that it's five. It means Kulam Chamisha, Heim Olam Haba. All five of them are equally sharing in Olam Haba. Meaning, in other words, the other ones that are mentioned in the pasuk, Eson, Haman, Kalkol, and Dora, or Darda, are all we know from elsewhere that they were tzaddikim, that they were chachamim. There's a pasuk in Malachim when it talks about the chachma, what a tremendous chachma Shlomo has. It says he was wiser than these Eson and Haman and Kalkol and so forth. So we see that they were chachamim, meaning that they were tzaddikim, and the pasuk is saying Shlomo's chachma was even greater than theirs. So we know that they were bnei olam. If it puts Zimri, which as the Gemara is going to say, is another name for Achan, together with them, then it means that he also was a Ben Olam Haba. So therefore, we also see that his why. Now, how could that be? Because his vidui is mechaper for him. Well, the Gemara asks, Ksiv Zimri uksiv Achan. So now, in this pasuk, he's being called Zimri, but in the pasukim in Yeshua, it calls him Achan. So which one is his real name? Now, Marsha brings up the problem with that, because the psukim over there in Divrei Yomim, actually after it lists these five brothers and says Kulam Chamisha, it says Uvnei Zimri, the sons of Zimri, was Ochar Oichu Yisrael Hashemoah Bacherim. Ochar, his name is changed slightly from Achan. Ochar Meloshen, as Yeshua told him, Me'achar Tanu, that the Ochar who was the Oichu Yisrael, the one who caused trouble to the Jewish people by violating the Cherem. So we see that and in the pasuk it calls him Achan ben Zerach. Therefore, Marshall explains, though, that still, fine, we understand that he's not the same as Zimri, but nevertheless, when it puts Zimri together with the other ones, and it mentions them all, they all have a chelek lo mamba, and we're saying that, so now the Gemara is saying that Zimri is actually not just another name for Achan's father, but it actually hints to Achan himself. So then, which is it? Was his real name Achan or was his real name Zimri? Rav and Shmuel argue that. Chadama Achan Shmoy, one says his real name was Achan, the Lama Nikra Shmoy Zimri, so why in the Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim does it hint to him by the name Zimri? Sha'asa Maisa Zimri, because he acted like Zimri did. Zimri did publicly Mizana with Cosby. We're going to have much more detail about it later in the Masechta. And Achan, as we learned the other day, according to one opinion, was Baal Nairam Rasa. So therefore, in a certain sense, he's similar to Zimri in that regard. And both of them also, the whole Tzibur, also suffered because of them. Zimri, 24,000 people were killed in a plague, and Achan, people were, 36 people were killed in the battle. V'chadom is Zimri Shmoy. The other says his real name was Zimri. V'lom enikashmoy Achan. So why in Yeshua? In the story in Yeshua, is he called Achan? Because he caused the Jewish people's Averis to be like an Achna, which is a snake. Specifically, an Achna is a snake that likes to lie in a circle. It'll have its tail in or near its mouth, and it lies there in a hoop. You have a few places in Gemara, for example, we have where the grave of a tzaddik will be surrounded by an Achna that will prevent anybody who doesn't belong in there from entering. So therefore, now we're saying he caused the Averis of the Jewish people to surround them like a snake. Like Tana Shalachnoi is also related to that idea. Yad Ramah adds a point also that it means also. So Rashi says Gilgal Olep Kudas Avnei Sehem. He caused the punishment for the Averis to roll upon them like this Achna that lies in a sukkah. Or Yad Ramah also adds it means in other words he brought upon them Averis from their ancestors as well, where they were punished for that as well. He doesn't elaborate what that means. Maybe it means these particular people who were killed in the battle also had Averis from their parents that now caught up with them as well. Okay. Piska, so now quoting from the Mishnah, we said in the Mishnah that we tell the guy Stay Vidui, he should admit publicly the actual Avera that he did, in particular the Avera that he's being executed for. We said if he doesn't know how to say Vidui, he doesn't know how to formulate the words, then we tell him Stay Tehemi Sasi Kapara Akol Avenosai. Rabbi Yehuda, in the Mishnah, had said, Rabbi Yehuda, if the guy knows that he's been framed, at the Edom or Edom Zomerman, Omer, then he can say, Tehemi Sosi Kapara Kolovanaisei Chutzme Ovenze. Then he can say that my death should be a kapara for all my averis, except for this one. Because in other words, he can say that I'm not in fact guilty of this avera. Omruloi, but the other Chachamim said to Rabbi Yehuda, Im Kain, Yehu Kolodim, Omer Kain, for Yelunakas Atzman. So then everybody's going to say that in order to try to make themselves appear innocent. So therefore, we don't want to give them that opportunity. Well,
that means that their miso is not mekafer.
No, it means that their miso is mekafer for all their averis. Fine, and this particular miso, I mean, you just say, I'll call avonosa, you don't have to specify that this one is not one of my avonis. If he says, I'll call avonosa, fine, well, he knows for himself which averis he did and which ones he didn't, but fine, at least he doesn't have to actually blatantly say out. So that's the Gemara asks me, Nakwas Atzman. Okay, so what do you care? Let the guy have that last satisfaction that he makes people think that he's innocent. What's the problem? And the answer is, Kadesh Shalai Lahoitzi Laz, Abot Din, and Vala Edim. Because you don't want to call into question. You don't want people to just be Moitzi Laz on the Dayonim and say they could have done a better job false examining the Edim or on the Edim themselves that these were actually false Edim. So if you allow him to say that, people are going to think that there really is something there. So the Gemara says, Tonan Abanan, so Taka, we learn in a Braisa that Taka once happened. Maisa be'echod of Odom Echod, Shiyotza Lahore, it happened. Taka, there was a guy being taken out to be executed. Omar, and he says this Loshan. Now we just said, Rabbi Yehuda says that he could say it. The Chacham say we don't prompt him to say that, or we don't allow him to say that. But, Maharsha says, okay, he on his own came up and said this on his own. Omar, he says, he says a different Loshan, he says a stronger Loshan than what Rabbi Yehuda says in the Mishnah. He says, Im Yeshbi Oven Zeh, if in fact I am guilty of this Avera, Loi Tehemi Sosi Kapara Alkol Avenoisai. Then fine, my Misa should not be a Kapara for all my Averas. I'm willing to take myself the punishment in the next world for the Averas that I did, and including this one and including any other ones. Im Einbi Oven Zeh, but he continues, if I don't have this Avera, Tehemi Sosi Kapara Alkol Avenoisai. Then my mitzvah should be a kapara for all of my averus. However, and uveistin v'chol Yisrael menukim. Now the beistin and the rest of the Jewish people will also be considered innocent because they couldn't have known better. They did what they could. But edim, but he says, as far as the edim, lo tehelam mechilo la'olam, they should never be forgiven for the fact that they're causing me to die without, and they knew that they're giving false edus. So this happened. So again, we're not talking about that Beis Din would allow him to say such a thing, but he said it on his own before anybody had a chance to stop it. When the Chachamim heard what he said, so they realized he obviously means it. You know, the Gemara has an expression in some places, Einod Meshata Beshas Misa. A person doesn't joke around right before he's going to die. So we can take him at his word, and he knows. We're not talking about nowadays. A person might say, okay, so I'll suffer in the next world. You know, and nowadays we have no clue of what the next world is. Back then they knew that kind of thing. So if he's willing to take that chance, kind of so to speak, and to say, I'm willing that my mitzvah should not even be a kapara for my averus, and I'm gonna have to go through a spell in Gehenna, we can assume that he taka means it, and that means, in other words, that it means he taka is innocent of this, and the Edom framed him. So what do we do about it? Kshamu chacham ledvara. When the chacham heard what he said, Amru, they said, look, lachzirei eyefshir. To bring him back to Beis Din and rejudge him, we can't. Shekran nigzir agzera. Because the gzar din has already been done, and then we can't undo it. If we have evidence to undo it, if we have other edim come and say that the edim is zomim or whatever, then yes, but not just because I'm the guy who say so. Now the Mishnah does mention, by the way, they sent him a chachamim with him, so that if he has something to say in his favor, then they'll listen to him. But the something in his favor wouldn't be something like this that I was framed. The Mishnah says you have to see if there's mamash bidvaram. You have to see if what he's saying actually has validity and would make a difference. Here he's not bringing any such evidence. He's just saying I was framed. So the Chum said Eli Yehorig. So we have no choice. We're going to have to execute him. And if he's right, Saka and the Edom were false. And the chain is going to be hung around the neck of the Edom, meaning the Edom are going to be held responsible, Saka, for this guy's death, and the Edomster will deal with them. So the Gemara says, Pshita, well, obviously, Kolkin Mine, does he have, would we trust him? Now, the word Pshita over here is in square brackets, and there's actually different Gersos among the Rishonim, whether we have the word or not. Rashi does not have it in his Gersa. So according to him, it's not Pshita, it's obvious, but the question is, how could we say, the Chacham are saying, Yehei Kolo Tolid of Savara Edim, meaning that the Chachamim are taking him at his word, that the Edim are in fact guilty, but there's nothing we can do about it, they're saying. So why? Just gonna say so? The Chachamim are gonna curse out the Edom and say the Koiler is taller in their necks. So that's one way of explaining. With the word Pshita, then yeah, with the word Pshita, which a number of them Mephoshim have, then the vote would be, obviously we can't say that we should come and bring him back to Beis Din and retry the case just gonna say so. And the answer is, Loit Sricha, yes, but the Chiddush, that what we're saying is, the Kahadri Behusadi. The Edom themselves retract what they said. They themselves say, you know what, the guy is right, we were lying.
Even though
they say that, nevertheless, we cannot undo the Edus. So the Gemara asks, "Chi hadru b'hu mai habi?" Okay, but still, what's the chiddush in that? Even if they retract what they say, so what? V'ha, we know that the din is kivin shehigid shuvein echozer umagid. When Edom have said their edus in Beis Din and it's been cross examined and all that, then they do not have the ability to say something different. They can't say that we were lying. They can't even say that Amman points out. They can't say, for example, that we were misled into the edus. They can't say anything. They can't say anything afterwards. After their edus has been cross-examined, that would cause their edus to be undone or to be canceled. Because that's how it is. The pasuk says, "Im lo yagid v'nosa avoino," that if a person knows edus and does not testify in Beis Din, then he'll bear his guilt. We learn from that. Im lo yagid, if he doesn't say, but he has the one time to say, and kivin shehigid shuvein echozer umagid, then he can't say something else afterwards that will undo what he said. You know, Abdul in the Goyish court system, you'll have, well, first of all, in the Goyish court system, a person is also supposed to take the witness stand on behalf of themselves. You don't have that in all but the Dinin. But anyway, but also, for example, there, you can have, you know, you have on all these, you have in all these dramas and things like that, you know, where the lawyer will be cross-examining the aide and he'll break down and say, you know what, I was lying. And halacha, there's no such thing. Once the cross-examination is done, then that's it. We don't want to hear anything further from the aide. So the point is, in other words, again, what's the chiddush over here, that even if the Edim say we were lying, that we shouldn't go and retry the case? And the answer is, loy tzricha, yes, but the only reason it needs to be said is the afagav de kol yavi taima lemosayu. Even if they give a good logical reason of why they said false Edim, in other words, Rashi says the point is like this. They might say, you know what, we had in the previous perek, when we were talking about how they, before they start listening to the Edom's Edus, they give them a long warning, keep in mind, l'fichach nivra adam yichidi, because it would be a whole world, and you're going to be chayav for the guy's death and all of his descendants, etc., and we went through all of that. And we had at the end of the Mishnah that the Edom may say, malonu locha b'damo shozeh, you know what, taka, why should we have to be potentially guilty of the death of this guy and all of his descendants? Fine, we just won't give Edus in the first place. And the Beis Din tells them no, because the fact is in lo yagid v'nasa avoinu. So now the point is the same thing. What's this kivin shehigid shuvein echozer umagid? The reason behind it, Rashi says, is precisely that. They may think to themselves, you know what? After they gave the edus, they may second guess themselves, you know what? After all, though, we don't want to be responsible for this guy's death. So therefore we ignore any future statement of theirs. But now, the point is, even if they give a good logical reason, and they say the reason we did it to begin with is because we hate the guy, Nevertheless, we don't accept it. So that's the point. That's the point in this story. This guy is saying that this guy is implying that he's not guilty, and that's going to be the Edom's fault. So even if the Edom were to say, you know what, it's true, we tack a lie because we hate the guy and we wanted to see him killed. Nevertheless, Kivin Shehigin Shuvin Echozu Magid, and we don't allow them to undo their testimony, and we have to take the guy and execute him, even though we know he was framed. So the only choice we can say at that point is Yehei Koilot Toli B'Tzaver Edom. The chain of responsibility is going to hang around the neck of the Edom, and the Eibishter will deal with them.
There is no way to overturn it.
So the way to overturn it would be if new evidence comes up. New evidence independent of those Edom. So if you have, Edom Mazimim, if you have other Edom come in and show that they're Edom Zimim, or you have, let's say, for example, the guy's on trial for murder, and then the victim himself walks into Beis Din. Yeah, you have cases where they can undo the case. And again, you know, the guy himself, as the Mishnah says, they send along Tamar Chachamim with him, so that if he has something to say in his defense, we'll bring him back to Beis Din and hear it. But it has to be new evidence, not from the Edom themselves, because Kivin Shehigin Shuvin Echozer Magid. And the Gemara says, Kiyahu Maisa Deboya Misa. Like the story of Boya Mirza. So Boya can mean needs, and Mirza would mean covered, and in that case it would mean the story that needs covering up. However, the Mephoshim seem to understand that Boya is a name, and Mirza is like the word Mirza, which means a tax collector. So Rashi brings the story at length over here. The Yerushalmi and Tagiga brings the story with some variations. The story is as follows. One time there was a Jewish tax collector who was a Rosha. As we learned before, tax collectors, first of all, nobody likes tax collectors as it is, but except we had the father of Reb Zeira earlier in Amasechta, but normally nobody likes tax collectors anyhow, but especially in those days, the tax system was set up such that it was very easy for tax collectors to abuse their position and take more money from people than they were supposed to, and so on, and therefore, in general, we consider them to be a Rosha. And this guy was a notorious Rosha. The Yerushalmi, when it tells the story, calls the guy Mayon, which maybe is the same as Boya over here. So Boya Mirza then would be Boya or Mayo or whatever, the tax collector. Anyway, Rashi tells the story that he died the same day there was an Odom Godot. Maybe the name comes from Loshon Mabua. Okay, whatever.
It's the same as Mayo.
Maybe, could be. It's a good point. Actually, that's a good point. Mabua, like a well of water in Mayan, could be. Whatever the case. So he died on the same day an Odom Godot, a great Talmud Chacham, died. So now, who's coming to the respective Levayas? The Levaya, the Talmud Chacham, of course, everybody tunes out for the Levaya. The Moichas, you have Kama Minyan, you have his immediate family and whatever. Nobody's interested in him. Then, as the Levayas were going on, they were all of a sudden attacked by enemies. So everybody ran away, and left the two coffins over there. The only one that stayed behind was a Talmud of the Chacham. He's not going to abandon his Rebbe no matter what. Eventually they all returned to continue the Levayas, but they mixed up which is which. So everybody went to the Moichus and were joining his Levaya to give him tremendous honor, and meanwhile, and then maybe a few people are going to the Chacham, and the Talmud is yelling over there, you're making a mistake, you're going to the wrong one, nobody paid any attention to him. The Yerushalmi, when it tells the story, tells it a little bit differently. It says there were two Hasidim in town. They always used to learn together and do everything together. One of them passed away, and the same thing, you have this whole thing with the Moichus, and the Yerushalmi doesn't have that anything about bandits attacking, just that they had people mixed up and went to the wrong Levaya. In any case, the Talmud in Rashi's version, the other Chassid is Chavrusa, and the Yerushalmi's version is very bothered by that Hayitochen that this Chacham and Chassid didn't get his proper respect, and then on the other hand, this Moichus, this Rosha, got this tremendous respect by Levaya. So that night he has a dream. In Rashi's version it's his Rebbe, and in the Yerushalmi's version it's his Chavrusa. Comes to him and shows him, first of all, he says, let me show you my place in Gan Eden, let me show you the place of others, of some other people over here in Gan Eden, and let me show you what this tax collector is doing in Gehenim. And the version of the Yerushalmi, he shows him a couple of other people in Gehenim as well. In part, this tax collector is having tremendous tsaris in Gehenim. In Rashi's version, he has the hinge of the door of Gehenim is turning in his ear. hinges in those times were made as a pin that went into the ground. So you have, imagine like his ear is the hole in the ground that the hinge pin should turn in, and his ear is stuck there instead of that. And in the version of the Yerushalmi, he has that, like he's near a stream of water, and he can almost reach it with his tongue to lap up some of the water, but just barely can't. The Yerushalmi has somebody else over there with the hinge pin in their ear. Anyway, meanwhile, I have this tremendously wonderful place in Gan Eden. So what's going on, he says, that one time I did one slight Avera. Rashi says that one time I heard people insulting the Talmud Chacham, and I didn't say anything about it. So therefore, because of that, it was decided, Min HaShemayim, that for that one thing I should lose the kavod that I should have by my Levaya. In the Yerushalmi's version, he says, one time I accidentally put on my Shor Rosh before my Shor Yad. On the other hand, this tax collector, yeah, was a total Rosha, but one time he made a big banquet for the mayor of the city and then for a bunch of other dignitaries, and they never showed up, so he took all the food and gave it to the poor people. The Yerushalmi has that as one version, and has as another version that one time he dropped a loaf of bread in the street and a poor person picked it up and he didn't say anything to him. If she is, so he deserves reward for that one thing, so he was given his reward in Olam Hazeh that he has a nice funeral. So, the Talmud or the Chassid asks, you know, poor fellow, after his Farta Yid, how long is he going to have to suffer like that in Gehenim? And the one in Gan Eden tells him, until Shimon ben Shattach comes and takes his place. Shimon ben Shattach is a tzaddik, he's a nasi of Jewish people. Why does he deserve such a thing? So he says, because Shimon ben Shattach knows that in the city of Ashkelon, there are 80 Jewish women who are practicing kishuf over there, and he hasn't done anything about it. And Mahashefa Loisachaya, he's a Nasi, he's supposed to be dealing with the matter or anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, and he hasn't taken care of the matter. In the Yerushalmi's version, it's actually he's told that Shimon ben Shattach, long before he became Nasi, he knew already about what's going on with these women, and he had said to himself, right now, I don't have the ability to do much about it, but when I become Nasi, I'm going to take care of the matter, and now he's Nasi, and he hasn't taken care of it. Okay, so the next day, the Talmud, or the Chassid, in the Yerushalmi's version, goes to Shimon ben Shattach to talk to him. In the Yerushalmi's version, he's told in his dream, I'll give you a simon that you can show Shimon ben Shattach, a nest that you can show him if he doesn't believe you. He goes to Shimon ben Shattach, he says, I don't need any nisim from you. I recognize that you're a chassid. As a matter of fact, it must be min hashamayim because I never actually said that I'm going to deal with these witches in the first place. I only thought it. So the fact that you know what I was thinking, the fact that that you're able to tell me what I was thinking shows that you're coming with a message min hashamayim. Okay, you're right. I got to do something about it. So he gets together 80 Talmidim of his. There's 80 witches, so he needs 80 Talmidim of his. He waits until a rainy day, and then he gives each one of them a raincoat inside a clay jug. He takes them to a cave near where these 80 witches have their headquarters in a cave over there in Ashkelon. He brings them to a nearby cave. He tells them, when you hear my whistle, then you're going to run in here, and each one of you is going to pick up one of the witches. We find the Gemara mentions later in the Masechta that Kishuf works only if you're standing on the ground. I guess you could say it's like an electrical circuit. You got to be grounded. In fact, that's one explanation. You know why the Chartumim and the Tzinayim, why they couldn't duplicate Makaskinim. One reason is because the ground itself turned into lice, so they're not standing on the ground anymore. So he goes into the cave. And he knocks on the cave door. Who are you? I'm a machashef. I'm a wizard myself. Let's try each other out. You show me your powers, and I'll show you mine. So they use their different magic. They use their different magic, and they make various kinds of food and so forth. So they say, okay, now what's your power? He says, I can whistle twice, and 80 guys will run in here on this rainy day in dry clothing. See, the first time he whistles, they get the signal and they immediately put on the dry coats. And the second time they run in, and each of them picks up one of the witches and they take them off and they take them and then pick them up off the ground, and then they took them and hanged them. The Oruch HaNer, by the way, points out an interesting question in that. Further on in the Mishnah, actually, the next Mishnah we're going to talk about over here in Ein Yaakov, talks about them hanging in and of itself is not one of the Dalad Misses facing. What you have is certain people who are given skila, it's a machlokas in the Mishnah, whether it's everybody or only certain people who did certain Averas, get afterwards their body is hanged on a gallows for a moment. So do we mean over here that they gave them skila and then afterwards they hanged their bodies, or does it mean that they actually killed them with hanging? So the Orach HaNer says maybe it can takamin that they had to kill them with hanging. Why? Because if the whole point is that once they've touched the ground, then they can do their kishuf again. So if you do them skila, you throw them onto the ground, then they're back. They have the power of kishuf again, and you're not going to be able to kill them. So therefore, maybe the taka had no choice but to kill them by hanging. Okay, whatever. The Yerushalmi ends the story over there. The rest of the story is told in the Yerushalmi in connection with the next Mishnah. The story here, the story thus far, is in the Yerushalmi in the Masechta Chagiga to demonstrate that Shimon ben Shattach was a Nasi. Because you have the mentions over there, Yehuda ben Tabai, and Shimon ben Shattach, the Gemara brings over there another source that says that Yehuda ben Tabai was a Nasi. Whatever the case, Rashi continues the story over here. The Yerushalmi tells it in connection with the next Mishnah. The relatives of these machashvas were very angry at Shimon ben Shattach. He killed so many of their relatives. So they hatched a plan that they're going to get back at him. They got two of them to pose as Edim and testify that Shimon ben Shattach's son had done something that's chayiv misa. They went through the cross-examination, they went through the whole everything seemed to check out, and Shimon ben Shattach's son seems to be chayiv misa. As he's being taken out to be executed, he said the same kind of thing as this guy from the story in the Gemara before, that if I'm guilty, then my misa should not be a kapara for my averus, but if I am guilty, but if I'm not, then kolote, tolot, tolot, sabra, edim, and so forth. And the edim got scared of that, and they said, you know what, we have to admit, we taka testified falsely because we were put up to it, we're some of the relatives, or we were hired by the relatives, or whatever, because they were angry at Shimon ben Shattach and wanted to get back at his son. And nevertheless, we're saying, look, Kivin Shehigin, Shuvein Echoizer Magid, we do not accept that, and we had no choice but to execute him. The Yerushalmi, actually, when it tells the story, is Shimon ben Shattach himself is thinking, maybe we should taka find a way, maybe we can find some loophole in Halacha to do that. And the son himself says to his father, to Shimon ben Shattach, the Nasi, he says, don't worry about it. Make me like an escupa on a dresses. Make me like a threshold that's going to be stepped on. Halacha is halacha. Don't play games on my behalf. So Pashat Yehuda is killed. Al-Kiddush Hashem. Yeah. Okay.
You also learned from there that you are allowed to make one witness and kill 80 people, if it's the same.
Yeah, so that's a later Mishnah, and the Perek points out exactly that. Usually you have Eindon and Shnayim B'Yamechad. You can't judge and convict two people on one day, and here Shimon ben Shattach did 80, but the fact is it was a Hiras Shah. The Gemara points out that you sometimes do things for Hiras Shah. The Rambam points out there wasn't necessarily 80 Vasra there either, because only Shimon ben Shattach saw them doing their Keshuf. Yeah. Fine. Yonyem Mashiach Ogola, Beis Tammuz. This was in the beginning of Tafshin Nun Aleph, so late 1990. The UN, the useless nations had gathered together, the Shivim Umas, Loma Rog Shugoyim Umim Yagurik, and they were tining that listimatem that you stole out Yisrael. They were not just claiming as far as Gaza and Shomron. They were complaining about Eretz Yisrael and about Yerushalayim as a whole, and everybody knows perfectly well that the real answer is the Eibishter created the world and he decides who to give it to, as the first Rashi on Chumash says. So the Rebbe continues in the Sicha, don't be nisvol from the fact that Rog Shugoyim Umim Yagu, because as the Pasuk continues, it's rik, it's nothingness, it's worthless. As Medrash Tilim says on the Pasuk, Kori Gushan Larik, all of their noise and all everything is so much rik, is so much emptiness and just spit. Because as the Pasuk continues, Yoshev Hashemayim Yitzchak, Hashem who sits in Shemayim, will laugh, Hashem Yilag Lomay, Hashem mocks him. So we stand with complete toikef, knowing that the world belongs to Eibishter, and he created it, and he gave the land to us. And not only that, the Rebbe finishes off, this Rog Shugoy, Mul Umi Regu, itself is one of the Simone Agola. Rashi explains on that capital in Tilim, capital Beit, that the whole capital is talking about Melech HaMashiach. So this Rog Shugoy is a prerequisite as a preface to, and the rest of that capital. Now also, when we have the latest news, there's also something that seems to be unfavorable to Eretz Yisrael, and we can also see that's also from Simone Agu'ola, which should be Niyad Mamish. Okay, we started talking yesterday in Halachas of Tzitzis about who's chayiv in Tzitzis and who's not. So we said women and avodim are potter. So now we're a tumtum v'andrugin is a chayiv in Tzitzis misafik because they might be men. They don't make a bracha because safik brachas lahach. Now the Alter Rebbe goes on that women and avodim can wear tzitzis and can even say the bracha horoshus v'yodam, just like they can do other mitzvahs as shazman grama. They could even say v'tzivanu the satav tzitzis, be in the same way as they can say v'tzivanu on other mitzvahs as shazman grama. Because after all, the men are mitzvah in it. And then because they don't have a schar like mitzvah voice, and nevertheless they have a shtickel schar, and therefore they can say the bracha on it. However, then the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, on the other hand, you do have the problem. B'chol, it's machlokas. It's actually machlokas. It's actually a machlokas rishonim whether women can make a bracha on such things when they're not chayavin, which is negeya. For example, nowadays you go on mitzvah shofar. For example, can women make the bracha? There's actually a difference whether you're blowing for a sardia or an ashkenazia, whether the bracha can be made, because sardisha poskim, beginning with the Rambam, hold that women cannot make a bracha on mitzvah sefesh as man grama that they're potter from. Whereas Ashkenazic post skim down to the Ramah, and here the Alter Rebbe say that you put them. So to make a bracha for them, again, if you were already Yotze, then if you're doing for men who are chayev, then yeah, you could. Okay, in any case, the Alter Rebbe continues that, on the other hand, it's mechzik yura. It looks like yura, it looks like putting on airs, like fafruming zich to do that when you're not chayev in it. So therefore, they shouldn't actually wear tzitzis, because after all, look, even a man is only chayev, technically, if he has a four-cornered garment. It's not a chovas aguf. So therefore, so it's one thing, shofar and lula of women can be machma on themselves, because those are a chovas aguf. But here, tzitzis is not a chovas aguf, so therefore they shouldn't. The Alter Rebbe doesn't deal with the fact, which you have more in more contemporary times, that women who wear tzitzis are often doing it as a thing to fight against traditional Yiddishkeit, and that's a whole other matter. That issue didn't exist in the Alter Rebbe's times, but there is that consideration, and there was that consideration as well. They say that the daughters of Rashi put on tefillin, but there doesn't seem to be any mocker for it. The only one that we know for sure that it says put on tefillin was Michal Bas Shol. Rashi's daughter was a Talmidei Chachamim, and they helped him write it, they helped him transcribe his Pirush and so forth, but I don't think there's any solid source that they wore tefillin or tzitzis. There have been here and there, there have been women in later generations who wore tzitzis, but whether they were so oisgehalten is a whole question in itself, I'm not so sure about.